I said, oh, Lord Jesus, it's a fire.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
It is 5 o'clock. Congratulations. Hopefully you're off work. Luckily for you, old dirty show, T-Mill, a.k.a. Psycho T, a.k.a. the face that produces the place. Tyler Milner's in the building, by the way, 5:45-ish, a little early with Best Bets. So make sure you stay tuned with us as we will make you a little cash. You had a good day yesterday now. Good day. You had a good day of college football, too.
Yeah.
As well. Only missed Notre Dame, I believe. So so stay tuned for that coming up in just a bit. The Astros invited – I could say invite. They allow the New York Yankees to come in, and they will be bringing their best pitcher, Max Fried, the lefty, 14-5, ERA just over 3. He is coming in, a matchup of really good lefties. Framber Valdez is getting the ball for the Astros here at the Daikin coming up a little bit later on today. Here is the lineup. Peña, Correa, Altuve, Walker, Diaz is the DH tonight. Reyes is at second. Smith, Dubon, Salazar is catching. No, Yordan Alvarez. It's a scheduled day off against the Yankees. Yes, a scheduled day off. He is not in the lineup, but they're going to look to try to build on this lead. It's to 3 right now over the Mariners after splitting the series against the Angels over the weekend. But Clint, now it is to see if they can continue to score runs, but also to see how Framber Valdez fares against a good playoff-level team. All right, he has struggled a bit here the last month. He did have a really good start in his last one, but that was against the Rockies. Let's see what he does against a team they may see in the postseason. To me, that's the big story of tonight.
Yeah, this is one of those games where Framber Valdez steps up and his lights out, and you remember why you love the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of those deals where it's not a monster game because it's regular season, but it is an opponent that's gonna move the needle a bit for the fan base. It's in your own in your own backyard, and this is one of those games. To me, it feels like one of those games where Framber goes out there and reminds everybody of what he's capable of doing, and what really, I mean, on average, season to season, he's done a lot more times than not. So,
yeah, like right now, at times you feel. Like right now, fellas, you feel a negative feel like the fan base has towards Framber right now?
I don't feel anything. I think it's
Framber, maybe a hint.
Framber's always, and Tyler's a good gauge for this. Framber may be the one Astro right now that can draw the immediate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the what do you call it? The emotional. Like immediate response, good or bad, right? I mean, it's when he goes out there and he's lights out, it's ace this, ace that, ace this. When he goes out there and has a little bit of a stumble, all of a sudden it's, boy, he mentally just can't handle it. What the hell is he doing kind of deal? He's getting frazzled. So he's the one guy that can draw some pretty immediate emotion on this team, I think.
Yep. He is 12-7. With a 3.18 ERA, top 10 in strikeouts, top 10 in ERA in the American League. So, as you said, more times than not, a lot more times than not, you know, he is the guy that is a ace type front of the rotation. But I'm with you, Tyler. I think there's at least a tint of a, hey, when you say Framber Valdez, what do you think? Good thoughts? Or gearing towards the negative thoughts?
Smidge of annoyance, I
would
say.
I think that's fair.
Because Tyler, two starts ago, Tyler was out.
Tyler, are you confident? Do you, as an Astros fan right now, you feel good going to this game?
Yes.
With Framber on the bump?
I do.
I'm with you on that.
Yes, sir.
I'm with you on that. That no matter what goes down with Framber,
that's very fluid with Tyler. With some fans. I don't think he would have felt that way.
Tell me if I'm wrong on this, T. Like, to me, even with Tyler, like, it's the immediate annoyance is a great term to use. It's the immediate annoyance, the immediate emotional reaction to get it together, man. By the time the guy, 5 days later, 6 days later, he goes to his next start, it's like, all right, I'm back in the saddle. I'm confident in him, ready to rock and roll.
Yeah.
That's the kind of response that I'm guilty. I'm guilty of it. In the moment, I'm like, damn it, man, settle down, man. Come on, what are we doing? What the hell happened? How'd that happen? He's supposed to be the ace.
Yeah.
And then by the next time his next start, I'm like, hell, I'm all in. Let's bet on it.
It just feels like the ebbs and flows for Framber and starts on the bump for the Astros. It's becoming more obvious every start. This guy is just a streaky dude. And it's all about the mentals, if you ask me.
But that's what gets me is nothing about his numbers say streaky.
But didn't he string together like a couple of starts in a row where we were all like, what the hell, man, recently?
He did not have a great month. I'm just saying overall there is like he is pretty damn every year you can pinpoint it.
Right.
He's going to give you damn near 200 innings. He's going to have an ERA in the mid threes to the low twos. He's going to be within the top 5 to 10 in strikeouts. Like every year, he's pretty. And then he had that one dominant run where he went with 26 straight, quality starts. Like he's generally, it's not. It feels streaky, but his numbers are not really that streaky. So it's an interesting thing. But let's see if he can continue this run. Now he started this, Clint, of the Astros having, I believe, what do they have? 5 straight quality starts? 6 straight quality starts they've had thus far. Hunter Brown, him, and then Christian Javier, Spencer Getty, and then Luis Garcia. Let's see if they can continue this streak where they have gotten great starting pitching about 6 or 7 straight games if you look at it. They've lost some of them. A lot of that is having to do with the plate, but they've gotten quality start after quality start over their last 6 or 7 games. Let's see if Framber can continue that.
That is
the big advantage that they have. Will Warren against Jason Alexander, who has been one of those guys giving quality starts here of late. Thank you, Christian Javier, coming off of his 6 innings, no hits. He will get the ball against another really good lefty, Carlos Rodon, Thursday in the finale. So, big series coming up against 2 playoff teams in the American League here at the Dyke.
Who's your daddy now?
5 o'clock fire.
All right, a couple of news and notes from the Texans as they prepare to face the LA Rams coming up on Sunday. Contract-wise, sources tell Adam Schefter, who reported this, Texans are signing backup quarterback Davis Mills to a 1-year, fully guaranteed $7 million dollar contract extension. Mills is now contractually tied to the Texans through the 2026 season. So he is a backup. I saw something prior to the season of like they had him as like the 30th best backup quarterback in football. This was before right around training camp starting. I have had my feelings and thoughts that has been clearly documented over the years about him as a starter. But I think Davis Mills is a really, really good backup quarterback. I think he's in a great situation. I think at times you could argue that he seemed to run the offense as well as CJ, if not better at times during training camp. I think they're in a really good position here with Davis Mills if for any terrible reason he'd have to come into play.
I think he's in a great position. I think the team's in a great position. He is an ideal backup. You're talking about a guy that's got about 4 years on C.J. Stroud in the league, that's been through absolute hell when it comes to being asked to play the most difficult position in sports in the midst of dysfunction and chaos. And now that guy has no problem settling into a backup role to a young quarterback that's durable, very little is asked of Davis Mills. He is more of a sounding board, if you will, and a resource for, you could say for Gerard Johnson and C.J. Stroud at this point in time. So, look, I think the dynamic in that room is absolutely tremendous. A bunch of great dudes that know their role. And you get paid $7 million to do it. And Davis Mills can be in this league for 20 years. Because, look, there's no wear and tear on the body. All the wear and tear took place in his first 2 years.
And he's gotten in
from a backup perspective.
Yeah.
He has gotten in and played well enough to where you look at it and you're like, all right. Yeah, hopefully he doesn't get screwed again with the Case Keenum situation like he did a couple of years ago where he but I think he's gotten in and played well enough that teams will trust that he is somebody that can come in. I don't know if they buy his jersey like Tyler. They at least trust they can come in and
hold him afloat. I hope Tyler never has a chance to wear that jersey, but if he does, I think in this division with this defense, I think the Texans are a playoff team with Davis Mills at quarterback. Like, I think Davis Mills can come in and as a fan base, if anything were to happen, knock on wood, hope it never does, but if anything were to happen, I don't think all of a sudden as a Texans fan, you go, man, we can't win this division. Like, I just don't. I think he is a solid backup in every sense of the phrase, whether he's got to play or all the way to just being a sounding board for a young quarterback. I believe that. I believe this team, the supporting cast of the quarterback, is good enough. Is really good, actually. It's great. I think to allow Davis Mills to go to a playoff game if need be. We'll never find out. Hopefully, we never find out. Hopefully, C.J. Stroud is the one doing it. But I think he's that good. To sign him up through 2026 and have that quality backup on the roster, I think it's money.
Speaking of a support system to the quarterback. This was great news coming from D'Amico Ryans in regards to his new safety, C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, C.J. is doing really well, progressing fine. We expect him to be ready for week one.
And I think you said something earlier. You should feel really confident that C.J. Gardner-Johnson is going to be the regular version of C.J. Gardner-Johnson that coming in on a Monday. That D'Amico Ryans will let the cat out of the bag that, hell, he's ready to go. He's ready to go. And when you look at what they did with their roster, it kind of showed that he was going to be in the plans and in the fit. How big is this to you for the people just rolling here at 5 o'clock? How big is this that they're going to have what sounds like a fully healthy, no pitch count, no injury that may prevent him from doing more, C.J. Gardner-Johnson?
Yeah, look, I think it's big. If he's full go, which I don't know what to think, did he have 2 weeks to ramp up here, or is this kind of mind tricks with D'Amico? But if he is ready to go and he is a guy that is like ramped all the way up and there's no limitations on C.J. Gardner-Johnson, I think it takes his defense to another level. He's the guy that his personality, his juice, his leadership, it's contagious. I think he demands that the rest of these guys, not that they all need it, but it's nice to have these kind of guys around, that they raise their level of play to his play, and if he don't, he'll tell you about it, right? The mouthpiece of that defense, something that I think this team probably lacks, is that guy that'll tell you about it. Not only are they lights out defensively, but you got to get up and then listen to him tell you about it. Not to mention he's a hybrid safety, nickel defender type of player that can do a million different things on the field. He's a veteran that can handle mentally all the different exotics and all the different disguises that you hope D'Amico Ryans can bring to the table. And so he's just a critical piece. Whether you look at him as a game plan piece that, hey, you're going to play safety and this is what I'm going to ask you to do, or you look at it as you're going to play safety in the first half and then if a quarterback and a wide receiver, if they're starting to have a little bit of success, then in the second half we're going to adjust and we're going to use C.J. Gardner-Johnson in a different way. He allows you to do all those things. And so I definitely think for multiple reasons, Ron, he takes this defense, allows D'Amico to take this defense to the next level, where if you have to play a backup or if you have to rearrange your nickels and your outside corners and your safeties to try to get your best guys on the field, you lose that. You miss that. And C.J. Gardner-Johnson, if he's fully healthy, is a real weapon that I just don't think anybody else brings to the table what he brings to the table.
All right, there he is. He'll be back. It looks like he's ready to go, and they will have their full crew in that secondary that feels like it could be the best in football.
Bad MF-er.
5 o'clock fire.
Last night, Monday Night Football, Bill Belichick made his debut in Chapel Hill at home. They were up 7-0, drove it right down their throats, ran the football the place was going crazy. Juice, Michael Jordan, Roy Williams, Lawrence Taylor was sober. Randy Moss was out there. Mia Hamm was out there. Nomar was out there. It was a party. Then I believe they went for about 40 unanswered. Ended up being 48-14.
Oh my God!
You surprised it was that bad?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Kendall Briles and Sonny Dykes went out there and
we know TCU. This is a good program. They were in the national championship game
a couple years ago.
They beat them like Georgia beat them.
Yeah, man. That was a real ass whooping. And the truth of the matter is, Sonny Dykes is an offensive minded coach as well, I believe. But Kendall Briles, I know him from his Arkansas days. I wish we'd have never got him up out of there, but he's in TCU now. And I love what he brought to the table. I love him. I think highly of him. I did not expect them. They could have hung 70. If they wanted to, they could have hung 70 fairly easy in that ball game. I think they were at 41 with 7 or 8 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, it was impressive by TCU, and it was, I would say, embarrassing for Bill Belichick. I mean, the entire college football community, the country, all eyes were on North Carolina, Chapel Hill, baby, and Bill Belichick and his rebuilt team. And not only do you get embarrassed, but you get embarrassed because your defense can't slow nothing down. Your defense is getting ran through like, huh?
Yeah, that was the part that was surprising. I think, was there two pick sixes in there? I think there were a couple of pick sixes in there.
Yeah, there was a pick six.
But I mean, the one that was big to me was, that's the part for me, is that his defense just got ran through.
Yeah.
Like so poorly. Him and his son over there running that defense, they've got obvious, hell, it's Bill. All right, we've watched him shut down the best quarterbacks in football. We've watched rookies come up and struggle with him, and he ain't always had, you know, the greatest defensive players in the world. He's been able to find ways to stop people. And this Hoover fella just came in here, and Josh Hoover just rolled through their asses.
They lit him up, man. That was a hell of a job. It was a great college slate, Ron. I mean, the Ohio State Texas game, although it wasn't real exciting with fireworks, it was a top ranked 1-3 nail biter. LSU Clemson did not disappoint at all. Garrett Nussmeier in that game to me is the quarterback winner of week one. The Alabama Florida State game was must see TV simply because Alabama was getting absolutely skull drugged by Florida State. The Thomas Castellano kid that left Boston College mid year last year transferred down to Florida State and told Alabama, "You ain't got Nick Saban to save your ass. You got to answer for something." And then his team, Florida State, went out there and did work. I mean, you look up and down. Obviously, the Aggies won, beat up on UTSA. Good little start to their season. But there was a handful of big games. Notre Dame, Miami came down to the wire. Carson Beck, the transfer from Georgia to Miami, was able to put it together late, and late field goal wins that game 27-24. Virginia Tech, South Carolina. South Carolina did not disappoint. I saw a report this morning where they folks are already hot taking that they may have the best offensive and best defensive player in the country on that South Carolina. Them ass-kicking chickens over there may have the best player on both sides of the ball.
Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs. That switched quick.
May
huh?
have something to say about that, huh?
That switched quick. All right, coming up, we've got our quarterback here who, as you just heard him roll through, he is passionate about college football and passionate about quarterbacks. And the number one story in all of sports for the last several days is what in the hell happened to what many people thought was the next big thing in college football. What happened to Arch Manning on Saturday? We'll discuss that coming up next.
Longhorn Nation, we're back!
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, trying to figure out the biggest story of the weekend and into the week is not just that college football is back, but in particular, Arch Manning. Everyone was looking forward to his debut as officially being QB1 with the Texas Longhorns, seeing what it would look like as they, I think, Clint personally, a big reason why they were preseason number one was because of how people felt about Arch. And just to be kind, I understand what Ohio State did with their talent and what Matt Patricia did with his NFL background as an offensive and defensive coordinator. But there were several quarterbacks that just looked more comfortable, that looked more confident than Arch did in the first game of the year. And I'm trying to figure out what was it. A lot of people are talking about it. Clint, I know you cover college football quarterbacks and understand the same thing. We've heard a lot. How about this thought? Was this more Sark than Arch that caused this to look in a way that I think most people didn't think it was going to look like that performance?
I think it's hard to separate the two. But if I had to, I think it's more Arch than Sark. Because in any way you slice it, the reason that people are down on Arch right now compared to where they were on Friday afternoon is because there were open receivers that were missed. There were opportunities to score touchdowns that, you know, ended up in turning the ball over on downs. There were moments in that game where you needed a quarterback, like a generational talent quarterback, to take over and, damn it, make it happen, man. I don't care if Matt Patricia's over there. You're in the shoe. It's the biggest moment. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, the guys that we were compared, that Arch was being compared to, their moments when they came, they the reason they are going down in history, the Tim Tebow's, the Deshaun Watson's, the Tua's, who am I missing here, Ryan? I mean, the great Trevor quarterback, Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence's, the Cam Newton's. I mean, the reason
the guys in college that you thought were going to get.
The reason when they that we still talk about them as the greatest, fair or unfair, it's up to you to decide. The reality of it is that Arch Manning was being put. The expectations for Arch Manning were in line with those types of players, not the Clint Sterners of the world, right? I mean, this was expected to be a generational talent. This was expected to be a guy that jumped on the scene and took over the reins on a team that was a national championship caliber team and keep this thing moving. I think the team played well enough to still be a top 10 team, to be a national championship contender. I think the quarterback, Arch Manning, I think he missed a big-time opportunity. Now, as you dig into what we saw from Arch Manning, I think the reality of it is, right, the athletic ability, the legs, the scrambling ability, the game, the ability to impact the game with your legs was severely overrated with Arch Manning. His legs, can he buy some time? Can he improvise? Sure.
They could probably chill on that quarterback power.
Well, we've seen, right, quarterback, right? We've seen Arch Manning against a Georgia defense. We've seen him twice, I believe, against Ohio State defense. And the legs are just a non-factor, right? Now, we were talking about the quarterback powers and things like you saw Sam Ehlinger do and stuff back in the days. Like, if your offensive line is dominating the line of scrimmage and moving folks, then sure, run the quarterback power. I don't care. But in a moment where you're reaching for straws to find offense, like, you don't that's not a time to lean on Arch Manning's legs. So I think the ability, let's be honest with you, the ability of Arch Manning, the tangible physical ability, whether you're talking about his legs or his arm talent, I think was severely overrated, severely overhyped. And the reality of it is with Arch Manning, this isn't I still think Arch Manning is going to be a great college quarterback. I think Arch Manning has a chance to go on and be a good quarterback at the NFL level. Maybe great. I don't know. But the reality of it is he's not going to be able to do it in the way that we see these exotic, off-schedule, off-script, athletic types of quarterbacks typically jump on the scene. This is going to be a guy that is going to have to find ways to win football games from in the pocket, on time, on schedule, get the football out. The running around and making plays with your legs and this big arm that rips balls into coverage down the field, that's not who he is. And I think that's the takeaway. It's not about – it's not about, Ron, with Arch, is it like, you know, the blame or, you know, what did – what was it that Dan and him were talking about? The Sark failed him, or this guy failed him, or that Patricia guy failed so him, good, or Matt Patricia was all those things can be true. But to me, the way you look at it is, I did not see a guy win, lose, or draw. I did not see a talent at the quarterback position that should have been talked about before he ever started a game against anybody not named UTSA and Mississippi State in the Heisman Trophy conversation. I did not see a talent that should be talked about being the number one overall draft pick. I think he can be fine. I think he can still be all of those things. But I didn't see what everybody else, the expectations that everybody set for him.
Yeah.
Fair or foul, I just didn't see it.
Listen, and I see Champ Slice. I agree that Arch didn't have the best game, but I also believe Sark was his biggest downfall. When he took the kiddie wheels off Arch, he was able to go downfield and score. I completely disagree with that. Listen, I am not a huge Sark fan. Some of it is probably things that I need to get over myself, but I'm not a big Sark fan. But I think he's getting way too much on this thing. He created easy throws. Now, maybe he could have ran a couple more screens. There were easy throws. I mean, throughout the first play of the game, the first pass play of the game, there was nobody with it. I mean, he created a great play action rollout, got him on the run. There's nobody within 10 yards of the receiver. I mean, he one-hopped him like he was an outfielder trying to throw it to the plate. There were multiple crossing routes. He's throwing at people's calves.
Yep.
Like there is, and when you say take the kiddie wheels off, nah, man, he just threw the ball outside the numbers when he got to see some one-on-ones. When Ohio State and Patricia backed off a bit, there was no reason for Sark to trust him throwing the ball in the middle of the field or really in any type of coverage. And I can't blame Sark for that. It was just what it was apparent.
Yeah.
He should have thrown multiple picks. He didn't see anything.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm just telling you what we saw out there. I'm not saying he can't play dead in a horror movie. That is not me. I'm not saying it is over for Arch. I'm not. I'm just saying out there, Sark is getting hit. Well, there could have been some more creative. Man, if you go look at the last drive where they, all right, here's 14-7. Here we go. They run a route. There's an outside. There is an out wide open. He's gave you full 5 yards of sideline to use. He airmails him right out of bounds. The next one, a crosser, throws at the tight end shins behind him. The next one, another crosser with Wingo, his big play guy, throws it behind him. He almost made a one-handed catch. He's got 20 yards of field. I can't put that. Hell, I don't know what. How many crossing routes wide open did he miss? He threw a 95 mile an hour fastball on a 5 yard crossing route.
Yeah, enough to piss the receiver off. In a 14-7 ball game where you've turned it over on downs twice inside the 10, there were enough opportunities outside of that for your quarterback to make one or two throws and have a huge impact on the outcome.
And they were there, though.
They were there. Yeah. And that, look, Sark could have been better, but to your point, there were definitely – here's the thing. Sark, there's some concerns, right? Obviously, the quarterback did not play up to expectations anywhere remotely close. Fair or foul, it didn't happen, right? Number two, when you look at the Texas Longhorns, I look at that, and I believe that there's a speed issue. There was one time in that game.
They weren't separating. I'll give them both.
There was one time in that game when Wingo caught that little misdirect speed. I don't remember if it was a speed sweep or a reverse that I was like, damn, that's a different level speed right there. So you may have a speed problem in Texas as well. And then you got Sark, you know, inside the 10-yard line, the way last season ended, the way that this season began. I think those are real problems.
Yeah, he's got to have a better plan than that. So Sark wasn't – perfect, but he sure as hell could have looked a lot better if his quarterback completed some of the wide open balls. Like there was a point in the second half, Clint. He was like, I can't throw it in the middle of the field with
you. Yeah, I think there's something there too of like of this vertical attack. And I don't even know if that's what they refer to it. The guys that know the Texas offense. When I look at it, it seems like there's just a consistent attempt to stretch the field vertically in creative ways and throw, like Quinn Ewers was really good at anticipating. He threw the ball like Romo. I can't help but compare him. He was really good at anticipating and getting the ball out of his hand and throwing the floaters to spots and letting guys run to it. I don't know that that is Arch Manning's forte. I don't know that that offense fits him.
Yeah, I think he could have had a bad day and the pressure got to him, but that like it was there were stuff there. There was stuff there, and that game could have looked a lot different. All right, coming up, Steve Mills' best bets will get you locked and loaded. And the biggest story that happened last week still has legs on it. Wait till you hear what David Mulligetta had to say. That's coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, welcome back in. Yeah, we're talking about Michael Irvin working out receivers at Miami as he's on the screen with that bad hair going off. Miami, big win as well.
I don't see the bad hair, man.
Oh, that's he's.
I mean, it's got to be two go, America's man. Deal, right?
I guess.
I just don't go, man. I don't look up there and see Mike. Now I see he may be going off the deep end a bit. I mean, he clearly
those dreads or whatever. Those dreads that he's trying to roll with.
Those are twists. Are those
white
or
twists? Yeah,
are they tweeners?
They're twists. I think he's got them locked. Them are locked up. He's got him locked up. I mean, Stephen A. again rode his ass the other day. Yes, you got to cut that off, man.
Oh, did Stephen A. tell him?
Oh, to his face. Repeatedly. You got to cut that off. Coming up behind us, we've got Texans All Access, and it is now – the season has started. Texans All Access is now 2 hours, 6 to 8. 6 to 8, Mark Vandermeer, John Harris. They will give you a preseason review, and Texans 5 in top 5 or top 100, excuse me. I think they got a 6th in there. But
they did. They're 6.
Yeah, I think it was 6. But they'll talk about the Texans in the top 100 as well as look over what happened in the preseason. So Mark Vandermeer, John Harris, now 2 hours. And then following those guys, Area 45, 8 to midnight. No, I ain't getting shrunk an hour. They're going to midnight, baby. They'll have the post-game show for the Astros and Yankees tonight. So stay tuned right here live in local Sports Radio 610. And coming up here in just a bit, we will get T-Mill's best bets as he had a good weekend of college football. We'll see if we can get this thing started off well. All right, Clint, you weren't really here when the Micah Parsons thing jumped off. Broke in the middle of the show, still became one of the biggest things, and it still is being talked about. He's been at practice now, and he's expected potentially. They're saying this back thing isn't just a fake thing. Talking about he may get a shot or something potentially. But David Mulligetta, who represents Micah Parsons and was able to get this record-breaking deal to the backers. When he was on First Take with Stephen A., said this in terms of his thoughts with Micah Parsons. To expect someone like Micah Parsons to be one of the greatest defenders in the NFL and also a great lawyer when it comes to contracts, I think it's a bit unfair. His job is to go out there and chase quarterbacks. Our job is to go out there and chase commas for him. I'm not sure exactly why it went this way, but we were always prepared and open to negotiating a contract with the Jones family. That was David Mulligetta. Your overall thoughts with things now? It's a few days removed. Micah Parsons was traded away from the Cowboys. One of the first stars Jerry didn't sign. And now not only is he traded, he is traded away to the Packers for 2 first-round picks and Kenny Clark.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, I don't. I still look at it like, what the hell? I mean, you traded arguably the best defensive player in the league to another NFC power that's really hella ranked ahead of you at this point.
That's your number. They've knocked you out.
So, I don't think, you know, from a 30,000-foot view, obviously you traded one of the best players in the game, and he's going to catch a ton of hell for that. But, I just don't know how good the Cowboys, like in terms of championship, Cowboys' championship probability – I know folks are going to talk about there's no way now with no Micah Parsons, but let's be honest, that defense sucked with Micah Parsons. Obviously, he's a great pass rusher. I don't know from a leader perspective what he brought to the table. I don't know how much of that was real with Jerry, but ultimately, I think this probably, like other things, started out as just drama, started out as a let me build this thing up, and it got to a point where it got personal, and they split ways. But I don't think any more or any less of the Cowboys because they do or don't have Micah Parsons, and I don't think any more or less of the Cowboys because Jerry Jones pulled what most believe is a bonehead move and traded one of the best players in the game.
Well, listen, I've said this. I don't think you make a habit of, hey, went out our scouting department, did a lot of things, you had a chance to get a guy like a Jalen Carter or whoever, and you decided to move up to go get a Will Anderson. You bring him in, you develop a Will Anderson, and you don't usually do that to trade him, right? You don't usually do that to trade 25, 26-year-old pass rushers that, especially Mike, only Reggie White, him and Reggie White are the only two players in the first 4 years of their careers to have 12-plus sacks in the history of the sport. You don't want to make a habit of trading it. But if you're in the Cowboys situation, Clint, it's not the dumbest thing in the world to say, hey, I don't know if this is a team right now that is going to win the ultimate prize, and let's try to use our biggest asset to really get, you know, maybe four or five players in one. I could see that and get big-time assets, right? Like, you know, you look at a Russell Wilson brought back two first-round picks, two second-round picks, a third-round pick. There are other examples of what teams were able to do when they've traded. Hell, if you go look at the team that the Texans are playing Saturday, the Rams and the Lions had their deal. Clinton, the trade got the Lions Jared Goff, and then the way they used those picks got them Jahmyr Gibbs, Jamison Williams, and Sam LaPorta. Like you could do that. But the thing with the Cowboys is they could have gotten a much bigger haul if they did this around the draft and instead of right now, before the season started, and they could have really opened this up to more teams. It feels very much like Nico Harrison is running both of these organizations. Very, very weird when they did it, how they did Luka, and how it seemed like it was only the Lakers, and of all teams, that's who you were trading to. So to me, it's just, this was not thought out or planned. Because trading Micah Parsons is not the worst thing. As you said earlier, they got the worst defense with him. They had a bad defense with him. But it's when you did it and you just, I just don't think they got anywhere near what they could have gotten if they actually planned this and did this around the draft.
Look, the way it was executed, the timing of it all was clearly reactionary. It clearly got personal. So, yeah, there's no defending that. I just, the Cowboys with or without Micah Parsons, it doesn't change much for me. You mentioned Will Anderson. I think if Micah had a little bit more Will Anderson in him from a, not obviously they're both great players, but a little bit more pillar of an organization, build around type guy leadership, I would imagine that Jerry would have paid him before he paid the other two guys. So I don't know. It doesn't change much for me with the Cowboys. So. It doesn't surprise me. Doesn't change much. I think they're still going to be a good team. I think they're going to win some games. But again, I don't think they're going to even flirt with a championship.
No, I don't either. All right. T-Mill's best bets coming up. He's going to try to make a little cash for you tonight. So stay up and stay tuned for this. What's your best bets, T-Mill?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We had a good first slate of college football to end our week last week on Friday. Went 3-for-4. Hope y'all were tailing. Freaking Irish. Need to talk to Pendergast about that. But back to baseball on a Tuesday, and I got three of them for your best bets. The last one is regarding this Astros-Yankees game going on at Daikin Park tonight. First off, I got the Twins money line tonight as they are hosting the White Sox in Minnesota. Got it at minus 140. Got another money line next, the St. Louis Cardinals. Better odds, probably a closer game, minus 105 for the Cardinals tonight. I have them winning against the Athletics as they host them in St. Louis. And then your last best bet for Tuesday, it's them Stros, and it's that team total. It's over 3.5 runs. It has not been set there as of much late, really since Jordan came back. Shocker, he's not in the lineup tonight. I placed this bet before then, but I still like it a lot.
Max Fried, huh? You liked it?
Yeah, mainly because, you know, the Astros are the Yankees' daddy. So Astros team total over 3.5 runs tonight at even odds as the Yankees come to Houston. Those are your three best bets. Do you like or hate any of those boys?
I like the Cardinals A's. I like that money line bet. Yeah, man, Twins, White Sox, man. The White Sox, they've completely let the rope go. So, I like that.
I was surprised it was at minus 140, to be honest.
I like the fact that there's three of them. Who are those for?
Look at Courtney.
Are those for you or
no,
Courtney?
She went in and bought them herself.
Ooh, what's look that? There.
Cowboy boots. Man.
Nice. Yeah. Embrace the culture.
Yeah, she's going to have you cowboyed up.
And the sunlight okay. hurts my eyes.
Court's gonna have you cowboyed up.
She's serious about it, man. Went out there and got them cowboy boots. Yeah. Now, get it on there. I don't know, boy. We'll see. We'll see about the Astros offense. See about that. Max Fried, 3.5.
He is good.
Yeah, he's.
But they're visiting daddy.
Okay. All right. Just one look at you. Wish the big daddy was in that lineup, by the way, as well.
Hell yeah, dude. Don't you do it?
There. All right, Clint, great job. Tyler, great job. Stay tuned. Texans All Access, 6 to 8 in Area 45 after that. I am Ron, the show, as always, Houston. We love you, baby. If you're looking at us on YouTube and Twitch, you can see the electric Tyler Milner as he's producing this thing in Harlem Shaking here. Didn't know you had that in your bag, but you learn new things all the time.
I was looking down. Let me see again.
Got to keep you on your toes.
I was looking down. Whoa, hey.
Electric.
There it is. And your guy, Ron.
The dip with it was nice, too. It's easy, y'all. It's so easy. My wife plays with me. Plays Underdog Fantasy with me, you dirt bags. I tell you what.
Just one look at you. I got a message for those Yankee turds.
Tyler, I love you, too, man. You're so H-Town.